Hello and welcome to Things I'm Not, 10 audio stories about the clichés, prejudices and general microaggressions migrant women face every day. Each story is written and performed by an artist who's migrated to the UK from a different country. This is a bonus episode featuring conversations about some of the themes our stories are about. Hello and welcome back to Things I'm Not, bonus episode 3. My name is Lara Parmiani. I'm Artistic Director of Legal Aliens Theatre. My co-host today, once again, is Becca McFadden, Associate Artistic Director of Legal Aliens. Becca is also a dance artist, and in addition to choreographing and performing her own works, she's also worked in dance and education, and most recently as a programme leader for an MA, MFA creative practice in the dance faculty at Trinity Laban. One of the reasons I've added these credits for Becca is that today we have a very special guest. We have with us Tamara Rojo, who, for those who don't know, is the artistic director of the English National Ballet, where she also continues to dance as lead principal. She's also a former principal of the Royal Ballet. Tamara trained in Madrid. In 1996, she was invited to join Scottish Ballet, and the next year she moved to the English National Ballet, where within 6 months she was promoted to principal. She has performed all the classical roles and has won awards from all over the world. You can read more about Tamara Rojo in our episode notes, where you will find all relevant links, so please check them at the end. But now, without further ado, I would like to welcome Tamara. Tamara, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you very much for having me.
So one of the questions that we have been asking people is something to do with the process of changing countries and how that can influence your practice. We are particularly happy to have you today because you're somebody who was born somewhere else and who's managed to build a big career in the UK. So what I wanted to ask is, how does the journey of your own geographical migrations intersect with your journey as an artist?
Obviously, having been trained in Spain and then moving to the UK and having had most of my artistic career in the UK has shaped my artistic taste. In the UK, we are very much into narrative because of the tradition of theatre, and most English choreographers are narrative-led choreographers, and I am myself somebody that enjoys story ballets. But I think the fact of not being from a country that at the time Spain had any kind of options for myself or for most dancers to have a career meant that since I was a student, we were already quite permeable in a way. We didn't have a school like the Bolshoi, the Mariinsky or Paris Opera that gave you a real strong sense of identity as a dancer. We felt we didn't belong to any tradition. We didn't belong to a school that will then naturally evolve into a professional career like the Royal Ballet School, you know. So as a student already, we were exposed constantly to many styles. And for me, it certainly has been a benefit, especially now as an artistic director, that I had never been, convinced that ballet was one thing and one thing other, and one thing only, but that I was aware that ballet was many different things in different countries. You know, ballet was one thing in Moscow and a different thing in St. Petersburg. It was one thing in Paris and a very different thing in New York, and definitely its own thing in England. So it was a conscious choice as well as really good luck to come to the UK for me, because I was interested in narrative ballet, and especially in Kenneth Macmillan work. But I will say that even looking back, now as an artistic director, having been in a way not belonging somewhere completely, has allowed me to be more open-minded and more able to challenge the traditions or to challenge the perceptions of what ballet should be.
A lot of that is, it feels really resonant with things that our writers have said. I think this notion of multiple experiences, of being able to embrace multiple things simultaneously, is definitely something that we've talked about. And we've also talked a lot about acts of translation, partly because I think with our project, most of the people we're working with are coming from a background in theater. So for them, often migrating means learning a new language and exploring their artistry in a different language and context from the one in which they grew up or even were trained in some instances. And I wanted to ask you to just maybe speak a bit about what acts of translation, and after listening to what you've said, I'm almost wondering if it's less translation than sort of multilingualism or code switching that happen in an art form like ballet, where the expressivity is so rooted in the body.
Yeah. Yeah, obviously ballet in itself is, I would say, an international language. So you don't have to do, unlike a writer or a theater maker, you don't have to do a translation as such, but you do have to understand the styles of each school of ballet if you want to have an international career, or if you want to present different kinds of ballets and be respectful to that style. You know, it's not the same to do Bournonville from Denmark than to do Baganova, than to do, again, Balanchine American. So you need to be aware of that style, which I will say is almost, it's not a complete translation, but it is a different intonation. It's a different musicality. It's a different accent in different things, or importance in different things. And I did have, like I said, a very international career. I've danced with many companies around the world. But before that, I was already, like I said, always very permeable as an artist. And I have enjoyed that. I have enjoyed also understanding the cultures of the audience. You know, if you want to, you don't have to dance for the audience, but at the end of the day, I would say that's what we're all on the stage, is for the audience to be seen. And you can be aware at least of what is the audience that you have in front of you. If you go and dance in Cuba, for example, it's a very informed audience. It's an audience that loves ballet. It's an audience from whom technical ability is very important. If you go to perform, I was in Japan, it's a different kind of audience, or you go to Russia. So you do those kind of translations of your own art and your own ability into those different styles for that audience, and out of respect of the traditions of each school and each company.
It's a bit of a sidebar, but I'm struck by what you say about the different almost intonation that's expressed through the body. A lot of our work, not in this project, but in the plays that we produce, we're working with translation a lot. And one of the questions that we're always asking in that is, how does the original language live in the body? Because we don't just want to transpose a French play or a Czech play or an Italian play to an English setting. We want to try to find some sort of way that original culture can live there. And one of the things that we do look at is even if the actors are not fluent in it, spending time with the original language and speaking in it and kind of finding how it lives in the body, how the body moves, how it gives us not only a different voice, but a whole kind of different relation to space and relation to each other. So that just struck me. And for me, as someone who's sort of straddling dance and theater, I always find those rehearsals super interesting. So to hear you talk about movement in like using some of the language we use to discuss language and speech is just really interesting.
And it's a physical transformation. I think it's a real transformation as an artist physically. You need to train that style, and it takes weeks and months, and you need somebody else to help you with that, someone that knows that style. And you develop actually different strengths, like if you're going to do Bournonville, not only the jump, but the style of jump that it requires. And the upper body, this kind of stiff upper body with a really dynamic footwork, that's going to change your body. And if you then go towards the kind of the new Marinsky style in Russia, which is really high extensions, all this, the volume grows. It has to be really long because the dancers there are really long. So if you're going to go there on the Sun Lake and the music is much slower, for example, play there than it is on the West. So you need to be able to sustain those shapes and to sustain those phrases of music. So your movement changes, the way that, like the back has to change, mm-hmm. in how you hold then every arabesque or how you hold the position. So you do feel a physical transformation. And if you choose one particular style, your body will become that style. Like you can see ballerinas that are a particular physiognomy.
You said that actually coming from a country that didn't have one specific tradition in a way opened your mind a bit more. Do you find that dancers, I mean, I'm not asking you to slag any of your colleagues, but do you find that somebody, I don't know, who trained in Russia with that kind of established tradition would struggle more than somebody that trains in countries that don't have this tradition of one particular style? Do you think it's an advantage in a way?
I mean, I think for me it was because of, I think, what I wanted from my career, and also because of where I ended up, and because of the role of director. But I did also, when I was younger, I did kind of envy that conviction, you know, that conviction that comes from coming from a house that has centuries of history and that self belief they have in how things are done, you know, in where their head should be and the inclination and how you walk into the stage and how you behave even as a principal ballerina. I never felt that because I was a principal ballerina, I was entitled to certain things. You know, some ballerinas that come from those schools, they move around the world when they go to galas in a different way. They demand different things. And sometimes I felt that I was, you know, that I didn't want to do that necessarily. But other times I felt that I had more conviction in myself, that I have more self-belief in the value of my art, which they bring because they're given that, you know, they're they're made to feel that they're chosen. They're the chosen few, very talented children that are allowed to study in these amazing institutions. And so they come already, whether they are, you know, whether that is the Bolshoi or the Vaganova School, whether that is Paris Opera, whether that is the Royal Ballet School or the School of American Ballet, you feel that out of all the people in your country, you are the 12th or the 20th that got chosen that year. And therefore that comes with something, you know, and then you're told time and time again, this is how it's done. And you're being learned and you're being taught by the people that have done it before. And so that brings, I would say, yeah, that self-belief and that conviction that maybe in later in life could become an issue if you want to change where you dance or if you want to work with different choreographers and different styles. So it is a positive and a negative.
Because, for instance, what we find in theatre, in British theatre, is yes, there is this pride in we are the best, this is how we do it. And so the result, though, is, and I think dance is different because I think there's so much more exchange of artists, but there is the result for theatre very often is when you come from a different tradition, people look at you almost like, what do you think you can teach me? And maybe it's because I'm obviously not part of the ballet world, but from the outside, it seems like ballet is more open-minded and more kind of open to international exchange and to maybe learning from each other. I mean, I don't know if it's just an impression.
I'm not sure that they're more open about learning from each other. I do think that in the last 50 years, their repertoire has become very international. So you see some choreographers appearing in all the major companies in the world. And that again means that the dancers become more more adaptable to different vocabularies, but it also means that now there is a bit of a lack of identity sometimes within the companies, you know, because if everybody's doing the same choreographers, then what does it matter that you go to watch one company or the other? I think what is also different is that there's a technical demand, a technical skill that you have to have as a dancer, that is not subjective. It's very difficult to make that subjective. And so if you manage to do certain things as a ballerina, you probably will have a career no matter where, because they are those skills are necessary. You know, to do swan leg, you do need to do certain steps. You need to do the 32 fortes, and you need to hold balances, and you need to have, you know, a certain range of movement, let's say. And so if you achieve that, even if you don't come from those schools, you might be able to join those companies and reach the highest level because the skill travels with you. And you can adapt it to the taste of that particular place if you want to. But it, nevertheless, at least in my personal experience, you are always reminded that you're not from there. Sooner or later, you're always reminded that you did not come from the school, that you don't have the pedigree. Like they used to say to me, you don't have blue blood. So sooner or later, at least in my experience, you are reminded that you are an outsider and you're here because we need you or because you have those skills, but you don't belong.
I mean, that was sort of the next question I was going to ask, which is a bit about sort of what are the limitations of that internationalism, and what are the barriers that dancers from outside the UK, for example, what are the sort of challenges that a dancer might face coming into the British Ballet world, either as a professional or in the context of training?
I think that depends on where you come from. Because Britain has a love-hate relationship, for example, with Russia and the Russian school. So you would say that if you are a principal ballerina in one of the major Russian companies, you would have no problem coming here because you're considered to come from an older tradition. And therefore, that background is somewhat valid. I would say probably France as well, if you come from Paris Opera. There is an understanding that that tradition came before the British tradition. So again, there is some understanding of that. And even though you will still have, sometimes difficulties in if you want to preserve some of that personal style within the context of performing British repertoire, you are going to have some things that you're going to have to sacrifice of your own identity. But if you come from a country like Spain, where there is no known academia of ballet, when there is no kind of admired history of the art form, no admired company, then it's a little bit harder. Or you come, you know, any country that doesn't have that pedigree, let's say, is a little bit harder. Because then the questions are a little bit more like, well, you know, why are you here? What do you come? What do you bring? And so it's more, it becomes more about you personally. And it feels like it's a constant audition sometimes. You're constantly auditioning for your position and constantly having to prove that you deserve it above somebody that came from here because you don't have a pedigree.
Thank you, Tamara. The other theme that our series and the conversations around our series have highlighted has been power and what it's like for somebody who has migrated here from somewhere else, especially for a woman, to see or not to see another woman who isn't necessarily British in a position of power in the arts and in quintessentially mainstream British organizations. Like in theatre, big artistic directors who are female and not from here are incredibly rare, verging on non-existent. And even though some people are in position of power within an institution, I think to be the face of an organization does count for something. You become a name known to the public, not just for your artistic abilities, but also as a leader. And that really counts for something. I just wanted to know from the inside, what is it like and how does it feel?
For me, it's more than anything, huge responsibility and a huge honor, to be honest. Because I don't know many countries that will accept a foreigner to be, like you say, the leader of the national company, you know, and English National Ballet is the national company of the UK. And so the fact that in England or in the UK, you can reach that, it just speaks volumes about this nation. You know, that we might agree or disagree on many other things, and, you know, Brexit has made things more difficult for some of us. But it is true that I was given this opportunity with just hard work and perseverance. And that speaks volumes, because I don't think, for example, that there has never been a foreign director of the National Ballet of Spain. So that's, you know, that's in itself a good analogy. So I take it with a huge amount of sense of responsibility and duty to do the best that I can for this organization. And I understand that this is also a flagship of the UK when we go internationally, that we represent, you know, we represent things like arm's length and arts council and values that have become very dear to me. The independence of artists in the UK, that, you know, that you can be subsidized without having to become part of the, agenda of the government of the time. That doesn't happen in many places. In Europe, very often, positions of leadership of ballet companies, opera houses, theater companies are given without any proper process, without any transparency. They're usually given directly by whoever is in power at the time, whoever is the Minister of Culture, and there is no long-term plan, because once that minister goes, that position changes and they bring in somebody else. So I am perfectly aware that I am here because of all that wider context of, you know, transparency and arm's length between the arts and government and proper due process in terms of applying for a position of leadership. And I feel it's an amazing privilege, and therefore it's a duty that when we go outside, I represent this country properly. And I continue to try and, you know, when I commission most of the time artists from the UK. At the same time, like you say, ballet is a very international art form. English National Ballet has 20 different nationalities between the dancers. So at the same time, it's a very multicultural, multinational organization that also has to represent that. And it is based in London, which is, again, a very cosmopolitan, multicultural, multinational city. So it's not an easy balance to make. But yes, it's mainly, for me, like I said, a huge honor and a huge responsibility.
That's incredibly interesting and quite amazing, looking at it from the point of view of somebody working in theatre, because for me, I wish all the arts could follow the example of dance and really open up to being truly international and a crucible for people from all over the world to come and collaborate and work together. And I totally understand your point and what you're saying, that obviously dance has at its very base a technique that is universally recognizable and measurable to a certain degree. So you can immediately tell who is a great professional. But equally, I do think that there is also a tradition for internationalism that is more widely accepted, because I don't completely buy the fact that the only reason why we don't see more international theatre in Britain is because of actors struggling with language, for instance, because we don't see international directors. And in that case, what is the excuse? I think it's more of an established tradition in dance. And what proves is that you can get the best quality and the best results when you put together people from all over the world. And even if there are all these different traditions, as you say, it feels like there is a dialogue going on. I think in dance, people take for granted that artists would be coming from all over the world. And it's not the case in other disciplines. I don't know, Becca, what you think about it.
I do wonder if the competition structure in ballet has a role to play in fostering that sort of international, or the sense that sort of those elite dancers in each country are encountering each other at different points through their development. And it strikes me that that's something that in theater we don't have. When we tour and see leading ensembles performing on the same stages, but one already has to sort of be at quite a high level to get there. There isn't this sort of sense of consistent contact and sort of needing to prove yourself on an international stage as being part of the ways you also succeed at home.
I think you have a point there. It's true that, well, like the concept of competition is one that I think now is not very fashionable, of just not having children competing, actively competing and being winners or losers. Is not something that society seems to agree with anymore. In terms of the ballet world, it's still very much part of the development of an artist. Most artists start competitions very early on, because that's how you get into scholarships for great schools, or how you actually get into a company. You have to audition. It's really a competition with a different name. So while doing that, like myself, I got the contract of Scottish Ballet because I won the Paris competition. And when I was there, I met Benjamin Millepied, who then ended up being director for Paris Opera. And I met many other great artists that become an international network. That means that you do then have that international perspective and connections. It's also true that there's these galas, international galas, these performances where couples or soloists from all over the world get together in a country and perform like the 10 minutes bits of the most famous ballets. That's another kind of situation that allows for that international mixing and knowing each other and collaborating with each other easier than in theater, I imagine. I would say that is also part because of the language itself. I would say that there's probably a lot more collaboration between, or far more opportunities for an actor, for example, to have a career in England and America than to have a career in Italy or France and America. And there's also, Australia. So when you see who gets to Hollywood, let's say, if you consider Hollywood, the center of performing and acting career, those that come from an English-speaking country will have an easier journey than those that come from a country where your accent is going to be very obvious. So I think part of it is also just the language itself.
So in keeping with the theme of the podcast, which is Things I Am Not, we would like to ask you to please share with us three things that you are not.
I've really struggled with this question because I am not good at compromising. So I want to be everything that life throws at me, everything. So I will say, yeah, I'm not good at compromising. I'm not organized, and I really would like to be. It's a real source of frustration for myself. And I am not one identity only. I am a mixture of many, many, many cultures and backgrounds and ethnicities, which I'm very proud of. I am a citizen of the world and a proud one.
Thank you so much. That's the perfect ending for this episode, I think. So thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciated it.
Thank you very much for having me.
And thanks again to my co-host, Becca McFadden, and thanks to all our listeners. You keep downloading our podcasts and sending us fantastic feedback, and we are very humbled by your support. And for those of you who've just discovered the podcast and have not listened to our beautiful audio stories, you can do so by going to thingsiamnot.com. On the website, you will also find ways to interact with us by sending us your creative responses and even ways to donate and support our work if you like. Thank you again very much for being with us, and see you next time with another bonus episode. Things I'm Not is a podcast by Legal Aliens Theatre. If today's story has moved you, amused you, provoked you, we would love to hear from you. Please send us your creative responses, whether it's another piece of audio or a video or a photo or a poem or even a drawing, by going to www.thingsiamnot.com/responses. You'll get the chance to be featured in our digital gallery. You can also join the conversation on Instagram at Legal Aliens Theatre or on Twitter and Facebook at Legal Aliens ITC. Thank you for listening. See you soon.